Welcome to A Bit of Insight with Lisa Mosby, your weekly dose of health, wealth, and everything else. Welcome to A Bit of Insight and another powerful episode in the Gratitude and Grief series. You know, today I'm joined by David Rush, and David is the heart and host behind the Morning Rush Empowerment Call, a community built on encouragement, connection, and leadership with purpose. I have been a part of this organization since day one, or maybe day five. And so David and I have really gotten to know each other. And so it's an honor for me to get to talk to him about something so deeply personal. David lost his father at a young age and his mother before that, an experience that profoundly shaped his character, his resilience, and his gratitude for life. In this conversation, we talk about how grief can become a quiet teacher, and how loss, when met with reflection and faith, can fuel leadership, empathy, and deep appreciation for the people and the moments that matter. David, welcome. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Lisa, it is a pleasure, an honor, and I'm excited for a conversation that's not just about business, because that seems to be what a lot of conversations that I have on Zoom are. So this is this will be a fun shift to that. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, deeply personal and talking about loss and legacy. It's hard to put this out there. So thank you for stepping up and offering to have this conversation, to share your heart, because I think it is difficult in today's society. Where do we draw the line between personal and letting people get to know who we are? And being that I went on my own journey, losing both my parents, and, you know, I was crying on the Morning Rush, which is an empowerment call, but it's also a business call. And, you know, you were there for me every step of the way because you'd been there before. How did you come to decide to do the Morning Rush? Let's go off in this direction before we come back and talk about grief. How did you decide that you wanted to pour into entrepreneurs and pour into people and share your heart with them through this morning call, Monday, Wednesday, Friday?
I can't claim the rights to naming the call, because I was hosting a morning conversation as part of another organization. And one of the people there, when we were at an event in the gym, he said, "It's the Morning Rush." And I was like, "What'd you say?" And he said, "It's the Morning Rush." I said, "That sounds pretty good." And he said, "That's what it is. That's what we experience every morning when you lead that conversation." And what I realized in that moment, and as I've led conversations for a number of groups of entrepreneurs, including now the Morning Rush community, is I think as entrepreneurs, we want to connect. We want to know we're not alone. We want to get some insight and wisdom. And we want to kind of get ready for the next step, whether it's the start of the day or it's the next step in our journey, our life journey, our entrepreneurial journey. And so that's what really fueled me, because I found the same need. And I think I can see when other people are needing things. And I also know when I'm needing things. And when we can be the space or the one who can provide it for others, that's what really gets me going. Yeah,
I think the reason that I stayed with the group as a whole for as long as I did was because there's something missing. You know, when you go to work and you have a job, you get to know your coworkers, but you don't really talk on that deep personal level. The things that we let go of and we talk about and we bring up between loss and heartbreak and, you know, health issues and all of the different experiences that people are having, and how do I keep making money, and how do I keep providing for my family while I'm going through this? We actually get to know the people there. And I think that's why so many of us have stuck together over these 3 years, and the people that join just can't say enough about it because of leading. You know, even in your introduction, you said this is for heart-centered leaders wanting to be the change we want to see in the world. And we are seeing that. 3 years is having an impact. But let's talk about gratitude. You know, how do you define gratitude? This whole series is about finding gratitude through the grief or experiencing grief and getting on the other side of it. But I think for me, at least, those two words were tied together. I was so grateful for the experience of being able to be with my parents when they took their last breaths. And then there was this gratitude of no remorse, no resentment of having had that experience with them. Now, it's been some time since both of your parents have passed, but just gratitude as a whole, or maybe do you think that you live in gratitude for the time that you had with family? Where does gratitude land in your life right now?
I think it's been an evolving experience for me because I wouldn't say I was the most grateful. I still have challenges, I think, with expressing gratitude in relationships or in general in life. Like, if you ask me to be grateful right now and say something nice, like, I could do it intellectually, I could do it. But where the real shift for me of late has been is, like, I'm not doing it just because it's a good thing to do. I'm doing it because I'm learning how to truly be grateful for the life I've been given, the family I've been given, the opportunities, the talents, like all the stuff that like surrounds me now. I'm appreciative of it. And I wouldn't say that was the case probably even, just a handful of years ago. But it's been like, I think it's been more of a hockey stick for me of late. Of really understanding how blessed I am, how fortunate I am in many ways. And I think to he who much is given, much is also expected. And I take that on in a different way now, too, because I think some of us are called to lead. Some of us are called to, as we say, like cause the change we want to see in the world. And, I'd say that this world's is calling for some change. And there's a lot of things going on that could use some really good leaders to show up in powerful ways. And so I'm grateful that I've been positioned that way. And I think I've, as we're having this conversation, we haven't even really gotten into it. Like, I'm thinking about like how grateful I can be and am for what my parents positioned me for. Like, I'm not here if it wasn't for a lot of what they sacrificed to really allow me to have the life that I have.
Yeah. And a life cut short. You were so young. They were young. What do you remember most about that time? Your mom had passed first. You were 15 at that time, you said. What do you remember most about that time? And how do you think that shaped your early view of the world versus where you are today?
I think I was, because of some of the things I experienced as a kid, there was almost a numbness to the event of it at the time. I had learned whether it was a helpful skill at the time, how to block out emotion. And so some of it just felt like, I don't know what's going on here. I should probably just go back to school and play hockey. Like whatever it was like that's the next thing to do. And in some ways, my dad said to me in that moment, he said, you're more than welcome to stay at home for as long as you want, but I think you should just go back and continue on and we'll figure it out. And so that was even his encouragement. Now, I don't know, I certainly didn't know what grieving was supposed to look like at that point in time. So it was, I think, a little bit of deer in headlights. I just got to figure out how to keep moving on. And I probably could have dealt with it in different ways or gotten different support at the time, but we do the best we can. And that's part of the learning process because now I can look back at how little David, young David, in that moment, the interesting thing that's come up is oftentimes when I meet somebody else who's lost a parent at a young age, there's almost a connection that we have before we even find out that we had lost a parent. But like, there's something, like sometimes you just sense like, I got something, there's a weird connection here. And then you stumble upon it, like, oh, you lost a parent. I lost a parent. Like, ah, now I know why I see you a certain way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think grieving is different when you lose when you're younger, 15 versus for me, 58. The grieving process is totally different. There's a maturity that comes with it. There's life experience. It wasn't the first losses that I had experienced. I had lost grandparents and other people had passed. Eventually the grieving does show up. We all have to go through those, I think some say 5 stages of grief, but we all go through whatever number of stages that you want to choose. Those stages of grief that happen when we turn away from it and go play hockey or go back to school or sweep it under the rug. Do you recall times where it showed up unexpectedly? Maybe you had visited a place that you once went with your mom, or different experiences that you had together, and all of a sudden you felt differently, like there was emotion behind it. Maybe you didn't even realize it was because of something that you had done before, but how have the emotions kind of surprised you over the years because you were so young when you experienced that and didn't maybe know how to experience the grief fully?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to recall some specifics right now, but there have been countless times when you're doing something. I mean, a simple example is the song "Don't Worry, Be Happy" by Bobby McFerrin. That's who it is, right?
I don't
And
know you.
yeah, but
You're so good with music.
that was one of her favorite songs, and so it came up recently and it was on, and I was like, oh man. And it was like a message that she, I think, gravitated towards because she was dealing with it in her own way, in her own life, like trying not to worry, whether it was about me or the family or otherwise. And as I listened to it, it was almost like I didn't want to go there, but then like I was there. And this is the gratitude of it is, looking back on those times, how she, in her own way, was teaching me how to be resilient in challenging times, whether I knew it or not. And like that was a theme song. It was like, hey, whatever's going on, don't worry, be happy. And now that I'm a little more scripturally based, like, how do you find the joy in the challenge, like when life, like how do you find joy in suffering? And I really look at that a lot. Like even when I'm in challenging times, I'm like, this is happening for a reason, and maybe it's happening, I hate the rhyme now, like for a season, but there's a purpose behind this. Like whatever challenge I'm facing, like there's some reason for it. I'm gonna learn something from this. And then on the other side of it, it's going to position me for something else that God has in store for me. And that's a new way to say it for me. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, you're bringing tears to my eyes. Recalling some of those things, I remember that from my dad. We lost my nephew when he was 1 year and 7 days old. And we decided that every time we saw 11:11 on the clock, alarm clock on your phone, we would think of Memphis and we would snap a picture of it, screenshot, and we would send it to each other. And it's interesting that this morning, or last night, I guess it was, I saw 11:11 last night on the alarm clock, and then we're coming into today to have this conversation. So those little messages to me, I take it as, oh, they're still with me. My parents are still with me. Those little things. He used to always say, people are with you for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And you're bringing that up here in this conversation. And so those things remind me of moments with my mom or my dad. Both parents had those little, I don't know, they're quotes. I call them Larryisms because he had so many of them. There was always these little, things that he would say. And when they happen now, as an adult, when they happen now, I hear them. I know he's with me. I know he's in my heart. I know he's in my cells. And so that's part of that gratitude, part of those lessons that we get to take with us, the appreciation. If we choose to, we can choose to see that as ways that they loved us. That's how I see it. It's like those moments are still with me because my parents loved me. And it's a way for me to continue to remember that. And I think, as our listeners are some of them are experiencing grief, many people have reached out to me and said, thank you for these interviews and thank you for these conversations, because they didn't know how to grieve. They didn't know how to process the feelings, or there's things that that come up that they don't understand. And I think that's one of the greatest things that I've learned from this series, is how these moments we get to experience our parents again, through our memories. So that was something from your mom. Was there something from your dad that stands out? Because you spent more time with him later, and you were with him while he was grieving the loss of, the love of his life. What do you remember from that
Yeah,
time?
well, my as you were speaking, my mind was kind of taking a little walk down memory lane, but something that came up recently, he was a coach, he was a teacher, he was very passionate about my performance on the ice rink, playing ice hockey, and so, and also performance in the, whether it was the academic world or school and things like that. And he had a few phrases. One was, it wasn't just do it, it was do it. Like, go do it, do the thing, go play the game, score the goal, like, do it. He also would say, give them hell. I think, that was about opponents, or that was about anyone who was kind of trying to prevent you from getting to where you wanted to go. Like, give them hell. Like, don't back down because somebody's trying to, stop you. And then what I had a third one, do it, give them hell, and go get them, go get them. I think that was in alignment with give them hell, but it was like, go after it. And these came up recently because I was in a leadership conference. I think it was Patrick Bet David, but a story came up where somebody was saying some of these lines, and it comes back to the gratitude of what my father just instilled in me. And I didn't even realize it, but like I can even see the like pieces of paper or the notes that he wrote these words on. I could see his handwriting because a lot of times it was about an upcoming game or some message he was just putting together where he was showing me something on a piece of paper. And those memories are, and it, I didn't always appreciate them at the time, but now we're having this conversation. It came up recently, and I'm saying, man, for all the challenges we had, like he was a loving, caring father. He was someone who would do anything to help me out and to position me if I asked for it. And I didn't always appreciate that in the moment of it, but looking back, that's one of the lessons I learned. I guess for anyone, if this is, people listening in, I think our parents were doing the best they could with what they were given. And sometimes for us, it may look like, why weren't they more this or more that or this thing or that thing? And we can be critical, but I had a really powerful moment of forgiveness for him, and actually forgiveness for me, because I had made him a criminal in some ways. Like in my over the course of my life, I made him out to be a bad guy, and it was, so unsubstantiated now. Like, not that it wasn't substantiated at the time, but it was like such a small portion of who he really was that, like, now I can realize, man, my dad was like an extraordinary guy, and he had his own challenges and was just trying to do the best he could with what he was given. And we've all got our blind spots and challenges and all these things. So that's something I would maybe gift anyone listening, is sometimes we don't fully realize some of the challenges our parents went through, and sometimes we'll point a finger when, man, they were just trying to do the best they could with what they were given.
Yeah. And I think my mom was 19, my dad was 20 when they got married. He was, it was 1963, Vietnam, how are they going to raise a kid? You know, like you think of the times and what they went through. That's my scenario. But everybody who's listening, looking at your own scenario, could we get into our parents' shoes? Could we figure out, you know, what were they going through at the time? Look up old newspaper reports and see what kind of challenges they were facing. And they had to put food on the table and feed kids. So, yeah, they do the best they can with what they're given. And the other thing is the tools. You know, I know I went through Tony Robbins training in the early 90s. You were part of another organization. What is the group that so many of the members of the Morning Rush have gone through? The learning group. You know what I'm talking about?
Unblinded?
What is it?
Unblinded?
No, it wasn't Unblinded. It's
Oh, Landmark.
Landmark. Yeah. I had done Landmark, you know, like the first year, and it was in its existence, like, you know, 18, 19 years old. So nothing compared to what it's like today, where it takes you through and gives you tools to understand the language you use, to understand the feelings that you're having, to understand how we show up in the world, because we don't ever have that. You know, nowadays it's available. When our parents were younger, not as much. They had to figure it out. There weren't many leaders out there that were showing them the way. Yeah. Grief often challenges us, you know, sometimes it hardens us and other times it kind of opens us up. And I know you went through this process with your brother and sister. What was it like to have them to lean on, or maybe they were leaning on you know, when your parents were gone?
Yeah, I'd say interestingly, I guess it was two different experiences because with my mom, I was 15 years old. And so I was kind of just following whatever anybody told me to do at the time because I didn't know what was happening, more or less. And so my brother did pick me up from school, brought me home. My sister was there. And I think they were trying to just sort through it in their own way. But I remember a moment or moments with each of them, and certainly with my sister outside the hospital before my mom passed away, but just coming to the realization that we were at the final days. And man, like what a weird moment sitting on a curb, and you're outside the hospital and it's like, is this really like the end? Like no more mom. Like, man, that was but my sister was there. My sister is someone who's always been like I'd say in some ways like a rock, like always there, always someone who's encouraging the family to get together or to celebrate the holidays or celebrate birthdays. Like that's like how she kind of shows up, I think, in a really powerful way for our family. And then, when my dad passed away, and I've tried to sort through some of this, but like, I think at that point in time, I was, if it was 6 years ago, I was probably 39. And it was almost like I knew it was the inevitable and it was coming. It was just a matter of like when that was, because his health was receding for a number of years and reasons. And so I was the executor of the will. And so when he passed, I went into like execution mode. I knew that I was the one responsible. I was the one who was really responsible and local to make sure that the funeral was put together, like all the detail, like literally within hours of my dad passing, I was at the funeral home picking out a casket. Like that's I like, not no experience there, but I was like, all right, let's go, like kind of like do it, right? Like kind of my dad would say, do it, go get him. And I put together this whole video of picture montage with his favorite song. It was one of them. One of the favorite songs was Frank Sinatra. I Did It My Way. Bobby Darin, Splish Splash, like a couple of his favorites. And we found so many pictures. And like that night, I was compiling like a photo gallery to a song on YouTube, and you can still find it today. But that's when I looked back. I was like, man, I went into like business production mode. Like, I'm gonna make sure everybody's taken care of. Like, I wrote a poem that I was gonna read at the funeral. And like if I look back, I was like, man, I really took charge, right? In that moment, it was like I kind of put some of my stuff on the shelf. And maybe this is a testament to some of what I do now, like in service of the greater. It wasn't really necessarily about me, it was how do I make sure things are getting handled? And yeah, some of me was like, ah, did you grieve enough, or is that my way of grieving? And yeah, I'm still up for debate. I think some I've learned how to repress a lot, but I think within repression, we work it out over time in our own ways. And I feel like there's always work to do. It's not like it's ever complete. It's just we kind of navigate it the best we can as we go along. That was a lot. Hopefully that made sense.
It's not a lot. It's really interesting because there are times in my life where that's the person that I was. When my dad died, that was not the case. I just wanted to sit there like a lump on a log. My sister handled everything and she's like, okay, you're gonna speak. You're gonna write something? Nope, it'll come to me when I need to, hand me the microphone. And it did. Like she handled everything. She just went in to, get it done, which is normally my role. I'm the oldest, but I couldn't do anything. I had been taking care of both of my folks for so long that I just went into this. I knew that I was going to have my mom who had brain cancer and went blind, and I knew my life was not going to get easier. It was going to get more difficult. Having two people to take care of, you'd think it would be hard, but no, he could still do things. So he and I were taking care of her together in a sense. And so I knew my life was changing and I just went completely numb. And I don't think there's any right or wrong way. I don't think there's a supposed to way of grieving. And I'm always fascinated with how our inner self, how our soul does what needs to be done to take care of us, whether that's being able to close that piece down and set it aside, knowing that it's probably going to come up later, or letting you feel the feels in the moment, being fully present so that you can move through it and not get stuck in it. Both work. And it just depends on the individual, on what's right for you in the moment. And it was different for my dad versus for my mom versus when Memphis died. When my grandparents passed, I was integral in making sure things get taken care of there. So every one of those is a different experience. So thank you for sharing yours. Were there moments, I think you'd kind of led up to this a little bit, that there were moments in your life that grief has shown up later on. How did it evolve over time? Hearing the song "Don't Worry, Be Happy." Now you can appreciate it. You can have gratitude. But how do you think your grief evolved over time? And do you think it's gone? Does it ever leave? Or I always say our container expands to hold it. I don't know that mine will ever go away. I don't, There's loss that's still there. I don't think it goes away, but I think my container, my ability, my emotional capacity is greater to be able to still handle it. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, lots of them. Lots of them.
Okay.
One came up recently, and I don't know if it 100% answers the question, but I was sitting at a table at a men's group, and there were four of us talking, and somebody said, when you experience rock bottom, you can then be a lot more compassionate when somebody else is going through rock bottom. And I thought about that because sometimes I've judged myself where, like, when somebody else dies, and I know it was really important relationship for that person or the person whose life they were in, I don't always get like I'm not the person that's like, oh my God, that must be so awful for so, like, it's just not the way my inner working goes. But for some people, whether they've lost a parent or not, it's like, oh my God, like, I can't imagine what they're going through. Like, I just don't react that way. I'm more a little, call it stoic. And so in the moment that he was saying that about hitting rock bottom, and you can empathize and be, whether it's empathy or compassion or whatever word you want to use, I was like, I don't know if I have a lot of it. And that's just like, I'm looking at myself, right? I used to judge myself. I was like, I should be more upset. or I should be more this, or I should be more that. And then I was like, maybe it's okay to just be however I am about it, right? And I had to come to terms with that because I would see other people react certain ways. And I'm like, that's just not my experience. And that doesn't mean I'm cold-hearted. It doesn't mean that I don't love people. It doesn't mean that I'm not caring. It's just I see life and experience it a different way. And it also may mean I need to soften my heart a little bit too. But I think that will reveal itself when it needs to. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I think there's a part of me that shares that with you. You know, I have a sense of empathy, but I won't get in the mud with somebody else. You know, I can hold space for them, I can listen to them, but I don't necessarily feel their feels, you know, where a lot of people do. Like they when they hear something tragic, their emotions are mirroring or matching somebody else's emotions when they're experiencing that. And I don't experience other people's emotions that way.
This may not be fun or funny, but I used to have a leader of one of our businesses, and he scored 0 on his empathy score, like personality test. And what he said, like, and he was unabashed about it. He's like, I know exactly how people like feel. I just don't care. And it was like, that's who I am. And I'm like, all right, that's I don't think I'm a zero. I don't think I'm a zero. I do care. But I'm probably closer to 0 than 100. Like it's, and I think we're all in our own personality spectrum and journey, you know.
When people say to me, "Oh, I'm
One
so
thing I
sorry."
can
Oh,
share,
go ahead.
and one thing I can share, and I was thinking about earlier as you were speaking and sharing was my mom used to say this was like her life guidance to me. Either marry a rich girl or become a priest. And like I was like, okay, like you know, I think you know, she was half joking, and I think there was some actual seriousness to it because you know, we were always like dealing with financial situations and all this stuff. So it was like, yeah, marry into a rich family and you'll be okay financially, and or become a priest. But I actually been thinking about that in a different way recently because of now my deeper faith and deeper understanding with God and my Christianity. And I can look at marry a rich girl, not about finances, someone who's rich in the kingdom, rich in the spirit, rich in her faith. Like we could look at riches. Because what are the riches, you know, worldly riches versus kingdom riches? Like that's a big distinction within, you know, our faith. And so I said, what if she didn't know what she was actually, putting in front of me? Because on the other side, a lot of people have said you have some pastoral tendencies and calling. So you wouldn't call it priest because I'm not, you know, no longer a practicing Catholic, but pastoral, priest, you know, very similar genre. So I may be fulfilling, in some ways, both sides of what my mom's prophecy or guidance, was because, you know, my relationship with Holly, who's, just someone who's got her heart set on the Lord. And, I also may be becoming some way of a, you know, I think in pastoral nature, like, sometimes the marketplace is where we bring our faith and our calling. So yeah, there's a lot. I don't know if there's more to that, but I think it was a fun thought when I had it, and it was like maybe I'm still doing the thing that my mom encouraged me to do, just in a way that maybe she wasn't really expecting when she said it.
Yeah, we don't know, always know where the words come from. It makes me think of, you know, when people say, "I'm sorry for your loss," I was like, you know, thank you, but I didn't lose anything. He knew where he was going. I know where he is. And I, when I'm experiencing grief, it's it's more grief for me. Like I'm missing that I get to be with him, but I'm happy that they are where they are. When you're a person, when you're a believer, a person of faith, and you believe that your parents are going to go back and be with the Lord, it's a different experience. And earlier you said something about ex feel all the experience, being able to go through it and have the experience. When he was dying, he didn't, he was like, well, I'm ready. I know it's coming. And he just had a different mindset about it. Like he wasn't fearful. There was zero fear, no fear at all. He just kept saying, I know whose I am and I know where I'm going and those kinds of things. And I really believe he was saying that to hear himself say that, but also I think to alleviate some of our loss, that feeling that the rest of us were experiencing losing him. And he's like, but you're not losing me. I'll always be with you. I'll always be in your heart. I know where I'm going to be. I'm not going to be lost. And I think when we don't have faith and when we don't believe in something higher or have a higher power, there is a sense of loss that comes along with grief. It's a different experience when you have a strong faith and you know what's coming. And that we've all been saved as believers. And, we don't necessarily have to fear anything. We're actually going home. And that's a place of safety and security, not necessarily fear. We're just letting go of this world for the next. And you had kind of mentioned the riches of the kingdom. Do you want to speak to that at all?
In what regard, like the riches
Or
of the
just going
kingdom, or
home. Yeah, just going home and, not living in fear and embracing, if it's if everything if the Lord knows that, he counts every hair on our head and knows everything that's happening, do we have anything to fear? And do we need to fear death at all, or when that time will come when we will all expire?
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of biblical verbiage, let not your heart be troubled, so to speak. Like, don't worry, don't fear. Like, I've got you. You're going to be taken care of. Be strong and courageous. And so I've I think that's been a recent evolution for me too. A more recent evolution is like, oh, it's not an intellectual, like, if you ask me where I'm going, I might answer a multiple choice and say heaven. It's like, no, that's where I know that I will be going because of my Father in heaven and who saved me and who died for my sins and all the pieces of it. It's a whole new worldview and a whole new mindset. And I'm actually going a lot deeper into it in some other realms because I'm getting mentored now in a lot of evangelism and apologetics. And how do you have conversations with people who are not believers? But people who are not believers have certain worldviews and certain belief systems that they don't realize may be flawed. And when they realize it, it kind of like can flip you upside down, so to speak. And it's like, whoa, I got to think about that a little bit more. I've been living my life based on this system of beliefs that actually has some flaws within it. And we're going to fight tooth and nail, no matter what our beliefs are, to maintain our sanity of our worldview sometimes. And so that can cause some real disruption. And we were actually having a conversation yesterday with my mentor Tony, and he's one of the more graceful, loving guys. And he said, sometimes you got to use real discernment in regards to what you bring forward to somebody and have them come to awareness and how they come to that awareness, because it can really trip people up. And so I've never even thought about that. I'm like, yeah, I just want to tell people that I believe in Jesus. But now, like, there's like an arts and crafts to how we share our faith such that we're still taking care of people and doing it with love and not causing enemies. Like, I heard it this way, like, you're dropping a pebble in somebody's shoe, and like it has them have to like kind of walk a little bit funny and like work through something. It's not, you're not always trying to save people. It's just you want to drop a pebble in and have them get a little uncomfortable and maybe see something a little bit differently. And I thought that was a good view, but it's an interesting new evolution in me.
Interesting. The picture that I got when you said that before the pebble was a bull in, are you a bull in a china shop with your faith, or are you somebody who's, angelically floating through life, representing all that your beliefs represent and inviting people like a lighthouse, like as a lighthouse, we're attracting people into the beam of light. So yeah, it different strokes for different folks, but I prefer the lighthouse idea. I'd rather just be here and shine the light, and those that want to come are always invited. You connect with hundreds of professionals every week. You're in front of groups, leading presentations, leading networking groups, training virtual assistants. In what ways do you think losing your parents may have influenced your leadership style and your ability to just step up and lead? Do you think there is any influence there, or is that something maybe you learned after the fact?
Well, I think as we were chatting about before we began the formal conversation, I was reflecting on who my mom was and who my dad was. My mom was a nurse who cared for people her entire life inside of a hospital, aside from caring for her family, her children and relatives. And my dad was a teacher who loved to teach. He loved to coach. He was someone who had a deep caring and passion for other people and seeing a lot of times like less fortunate people succeed. Like he rooted for the underdog. Like he wanted to find the unsung heroes and show them that they could be heroes. And that, I was reflecting on some of the movies I love. Like I love movies that are like the underdog story, the least likely person rising like a phoenix from the ashes, like the David going out onto the battlefield and toppling Goliath. And in some ways, this was something that hit me a couple of years ago now. The business that we're building for virtual assistants, I spoke with a woman in the Philippines who she I said, why do you want to? She wanted to launch her own agency. And I said, well, why do you want to do that? Because I like to ask those questions, like what's so important about this for you? And man, I know we don't have a lot of time to go into the full story, but she just said, and she started getting very emotional after I just asked the question. She said, there are so many single moms and moms in the Philippines that are just struggling to get by. And one of the things she wanted to do was to provide them a way to learn skills and then earn for their family so they could literally just put food on the table for their kids. And some of these were single moms just trying to figure out life. And when I heard that story, I was like, that's, everybody talks about like, what's something you could get behind? Like, what's something you're passionate about? When I heard that story, I was like, man, that's an easy one. I was like, I could get behind that, and that planted a seed. And then within a few months of that conversation, I met the founder of Access Virtual Staffing, and he had a similar passion for launching a virtual staffing business. And I said, funny you should mention that. And I told him the story, and man, now I get to do a lot of the things that my mom and dad did in their lives. I get to coach people. I get to guide people. I get to care for people. I get to find unsung heroes and put them in positions where they get to be heroes in somebody else's business. I get to help business owners realize that there's incredible people across the globe that could help support them fulfilling on the dream that they had for their business to be at the same time realizing that they're struggling and they need to figure out ways to make it work. And that's somebody said to me a little while back, like you're like a dot connector. And it really kind of hit on a lot of who I am is like I love to see where all these different things are happening and how to connect people, connect ideas so that it all works out as best as it could for everyone. And that's kind of where if I were to say that, I think my mom and dad had a very similar, if not the same kind of heart, where they cared about people. They wanted people to either get well or to thrive, and to have people that might be a little bit under the radar have their light shine bright, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. If your parents could see the man that you've become, if they were here with us and could see the man that you've become, the community that you've built, what do you think that they would say to you?
That's a good question. My birthday was recent, and so I think it was my sister, somebody put in the chat, like, they would be very proud of you right now. Like, they, I don't know if you can ex I think they'd be surprised in some ways. Like, if it was like, oh, I didn't know what he was doing, and now he's like doing this, it's like, really? But I think at the other sense, I think both of them had a very just deep view of who I was and who I could be. So I think the surprise wouldn't be too long. Be like, yeah, that's my son. Like, that's exactly what I would, want him to be doing. Like, I think he's in a really good position. I think his heart's in the right place, and he's doing and touch doing incredible things and touching people in all kinds of amazing ways. And that's not ego. That's, I think in the past I would have said that from an egoic place. Now it's just like, it this was the coolest thing today. It happened today. We were talking with one of our virtual assistants who was being onboarded with our cl new client today. We were waiting for the client, and somehow he shared that he was a youth pastor in the Philippines. And I started sharing a little bit about my faith journey, and he said, I knew it. And I said, what'd you know? And he said, even based on the limited interactions that we had, I could tell you were a man of God. I was like, that just, it hits me now. That's how that's how I come across. Like, I haven't, sometimes I don't realize, we don't realize how we show up for people. And there's moments where it gets reflected back to us that in many ways we are that person. And it didn't hit me like it hit me right now then, but that was a moment where I was like, and it was even better. He said, your whole team gave me that experience. And so it wasn't just who I was, it was, and our whole team is of faith. And it was like, that was such a beautiful thing to realize, that like, that's how we're touching the virtual assistants. That's how we're touching clients. And it's like palpable. It's not like, hey, this is who we are. We treat our VAs and clients well. It was like live in living color. I knew that about you. And I was like, what? So sometimes you realize you're actually embodying the thing you say you're all about. And that touched me. That was like, I was like, it's just, in a moment, like really happy, like not like jump up and down happy, but like genuinely heartfelt, like we're doing some cool stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me think of the word joy versus happy. You know, happy, we can choose to be happy. There's a book, you can choose to be happy, but joy is that feeling that exudes from the inside out, you know, that people get to see and that you pour into other people when you experience that pure bliss within your soul, that joy that comes out. And I see that in you, and I think that's why we're attracting so many people to the Morning Rush, so many heart-centered people who want to be a part of that community and want to feel that joy, feel that presence that you offer in that space that you've created. So thank you from all of us for doing that for us. Last thought. Any final thoughts for the people that are watching and listening?
I mean, I don't think I would have said this in the past, but if it's like you haven't found out that you're a son or daughter of Christ and you're in a tough spot, maybe just if you are listening to this point in the conversation, it's just an encouragement to say maybe give that some thought, because there's something that's available to you. And it took somebody who was very bold, outspoken, and made it uncomfortable for me to hear it for the first time. And so this isn't a big exhortation here from me, but it is a place where you can find peace, certainly if it is a challenging point in your life. Know that there is someone who may want to call you into his world.
And you can reach out to either David or I if you want to know more about that someone. Where do people get in touch with you, David?
David at accessvirtualstaffing.com, or look me up somewhere. I'm on socials and other things. David
We'll
Rush.
have your LinkedIn information, and of course, your Morning Rush information will be in the notes for this too. Thank you so much for sharing your heart and your story with so much honesty and from the heart. And when you say that you may need to open that up, I don't know. Not from where I'm sitting. I think you're doing just fine being heart-centered. You know, it's a powerful reminder that grief doesn't end, it evolves. And that evolution can partly be gratitude, and it can be anchored in gratitude. The way that we keep love alive and turn loss into our legacy all starts with being willing to talk about it, to feel the feels and move through it. So, for those of you listening, you know, David, if David's story reminds you that even when life takes something precious away, it also gives us the strength to see the beauty that still remains. So, pour into who you are and see yourself the way that your parents did. Hopefully, it was with love and kindness. And if not, then let's find you some people that see that love and kindness in you. And if we can be of support to you, please reach out. And of course, I always ask, come on back next week where we'll be talking about I think we're talking about being thankful. We're moving into November. So we're leaving gratitude in the dust, and we're going to jump into being thankful. So thank you all for joining me. And David, a special thank you to you once again.
Thanks for having me, Lisa. Always a pleasure.
Okay. Bye, everyone. Thanks for joining me on A Bit of Insight. To get more involved with our wellness community, grab a copy of my book, Live Well, Travel Far, or to explore our travel offerings, visit the website at insightcenterforwellness.com. And if today's episode gave you something to think about, leave a review and please share it with a friend. This is Lisa Mosby reminding you to live well, travel far, and always follow your insight.